Good morning. This is Daniel Garber at the Movies every Friday morning for CulturalMining.com and Take 5 CIUT 89.5 FM. This time of year lends itself to nostalgic family dramas, and this year is no exception. So if you feel like a blast from someone else's past, there are three period and historical dramas running this weekend. But are movies set in the past necessarily nostalgic? People tend to remember the families they grew up with and thoughts of holidays past, especially when they only saw their families once a year. So even if their memories are realistic, they're often colored by a holiday perspective. Take the first movie I'm talking about, Always, Sunset on 3rd Street, directed by Yamazaki Takashi, based on the comic Always Sanchomi no Yuhi by Saigon Ryohei. This is a pleasant neighborhood drama set in a 1950s Tokyo neighborhood. It's 1958. Mutsuko is a teenage girl from Aomori going to her first job down in Tokyo. She's the number 6 kid in her very poor family. She arrives there by train from up north just as the Tokyo Tower is being built. She thinks she's going to be a secretary to the president of Suzuki Auto, a huge car conglomerate, but soon discovers she's going to be working as a repair mechanic for a tiny car repair shop owned by a man named Mr. Suzuki. The boss is short-tempered. He's a loud given to dramatic bursts of anger, but she vows to work hard and learn the trade and moves in with a small nuclear family. There are no extended families in this movie, just friends and neighbors. Meanwhile, across the street, an aspiring novelist who is disowned by his upper-class family and who runs a little candy stand makes his living as a writer. He wants to be the next Akutagawa, but in the meantime, he writes boys' adventure stories for pulp magazines. So he agrees to take care of a kid, a stranger, a little boy named Junosuke, who's an orphan, depressed boy. He does it partly to impress a local bar girl. But soon, these three lonely, disparate people begin to form a sort of a family. This movie's a good view of urban Tokyo in the 50s when the occupation and post-war period was over, but the booming economy of the 60s had yet to take place. The scene rarely leaves the street where they all live. And the neighbors rejoice in the first TV or the first electric fridge. So the movie's based on a comic book, which makes the story a little bit predictable and the characters typical, but it's a cute, nicely unsentimental and not unrealistic story. And the characters being based on a comic book are sometimes comic-like. For example, the repair shop owner Suzuki literally shakes with anger and destroys doors when he's furious. And though definitely nostalgic in his view of the good old days where neighbors all knew and cared for one another, I wouldn't exactly call it sugar-coated. It does show poverty and struggle, war deaths, geishas, alcoholism, and snobbery. And this movie also has a very distinctive look to it, shot with a strange retro feel, in color with the appearance of a tinted black-and-white movie that has faded over the past half century. They appear to have used old black and white footage for some of the city backgrounds, which gives it a really neat feel. Another Japanese movie with a decidedly different take on the past is Memories of Matsuko, directed by Nakashima Tetsuya. Sho is a young failed musician who goes to his aunt Matsuko's home to pack stuff up after she dies. He's never met her, but by going through the piles of trash she left in her apartment, he gradually pieces together her life. Matsuko is shown as a tragic heroine with all her sadness, beauty, and drama. As her past is gradually revealed, the earnest school teacher, the bedazzled mistress, the sex trade worker, the accused murderess, the lover, the prisoner, she becomes not a miserable loner, but a really interesting person. Most of the movie is narrated by her in a sort of a memoir she leaves behind. At the start, she's an idealistic teacher who defends Ryu, one of her students, when he's accused of stealing money on a school trip. When it's blamed on her, she loses her job, and her father says she's dead to him, and her life begins a slow downward spiral into hellish degradation. She's saved at one point only by the image of a singer from the 80s teen pop group Hikaru Genji, known mainly for its roller skating teenage singers. The movie resembles the movies of Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who directed Micmac and Amélie, but with a much brighter, day-glow, candy-colored style to it, with a distinctly Japanese, not French feel. It jumps from TV commercials, music videos, fantasies, and comic book tableaus to intense and violent drama. I was a bit disturbed by how much violence there was, almost always by the various men in Matsuko's life, a philanderer, a pimp, a yakuza hood, who repeatedly slap her, punch her, and throw her to the ground, like in an old-school exploitation flick. But I think the movie does this to make Matsuko a sympathetic, and at times vengeful, heroine. The more she suffers, the more she perseveres. Memories of Matsuko is a classic family tragedy with a rich story, not nostalgic. Also opening this weekend is the winner of this year's People's Choice Award at the Toronto Film Festival and a likely nominee for various Academy Awards. The movie's The King's Speech, directed by Tom Hooper. Lionel, played by Jeffrey Rush, is an Australian speech therapist who invented techniques for returned soldiers from World War I. He's hired in great secrecy to help a man, Colin Firth, known to his friends as Bertie, and who later becomes King George VI, because he has a terrible stutter. With the advent of radio, he needs to fix his speech to stop freezing up whenever he's asked to make an announcement. The meeting is arranged by his wife, Elizabeth. But Lionel is a commoner, the first Bertie has ever actually met, and he's used to being addressed as His Royal Highness or just Sir. Lionel works in a dirty, broken-down basement, while Bertie lives in a palace, Buckingham Palace. But Lionel insists they talk to each other as regular people do. He decides Bertie's problems are psychological. He's intimidated by his father, the king, and his brother, the Prince of Wales. So through the use of his experimental and amusing methods, he tries to get him comfortable pronouncing words without a stammer. Now, this is based on true story, and Canadians I've talked to lived through that era all remember that the king did indeed have a stutter, so it's interesting to watch his speech improve. And the acting was all credible, with Derek Jacobi as the Archbishop of Canterbury and the frowsy, redoubtable actress with the double-barreled name Helena Bonham Carter as the future Queen Elizabeth, mother of the current queen. But this movie rubbed me the wrong way. Everything is so homogenized, and the accents of the working-class Aussie therapist and the king aren't really that different. And the history, it's such a storybook feel to it. Here's Winston Churchill harumphing about this, and there's Wallace Simpson whinging about that. The whole movie felt like an American TV view of what England was like in order to attract more Oscar votes. It was even visibly tiresome with its constant, awful use of a wide-angle lens where characters lean forward into the camera at a distorted angle, giving the whole movie a sort of a get-it-get-it tone to it. I can tell the movie's going to be popular, but it didn't do much for me. It's enjoyable, but it's such a sucky feeling. Like the whole movie was just pandering to nostalgic, royal-obsessed, faux Anglophilic Americans to send them some Oscars. It all left me feeling vaguely annoyed. So just to review, today I talked about two Japanese movies, Memories of Matsuko and Always Sunset at 3rd Street, playing for free this weekend at the Blur Cinema. Check listings for times. And The King's Speech, which opens today. This is Daniel Garber reviewing movies each Friday morning on Take 5, CIUT 89.5 FM, and on my website, culturalmining.com.